Accession number 30271, Reel 9.
Leading Air Craftsman Walker, Reel 9. You were describing how the Spitfires would fly off on the Mediterranean side and then you'd hear their guns firing.
And this was to align the guns so that they could fire to a focal point somewhere in front of the aircraft. And there was one particular case where the aircraft flew off, did its test, and then all of a sudden it crashed into the sea for no apparent reason. And we don't know why that happened, but that was the penalty some people paid. That was pilot gun. Now, when they had got sufficient aircraft together, then they would fly off in threes to form the equivalent of a squadron. And I can only assume that they were flying to North Africa. Mm. And this was in preparation for the recovery of the North Africa from Rommel. And so there's that area.
Did you have anything to do with the Spitfires?
No, no. We was it was all onward going there. Mm. But no, we had nothing to do. It was like an entity in its own right.
Yeah. One thing you mention is the matter of the handling of aviation fuel and the fact that some of it was stolen and that some of it was contaminated so that it had to be filtered. Could you say a bit more
about
that?
Yes, I can. We, at least the authorities, realised that the jerry cans, these would be carrying about 2 gallons, that were being shipped out from Britain were heavily contaminated. Now, they've been in store for a long time, I'm sure of that, because of the rust that was shown inside the tanks, the tins. But it meant that we had to filter off water. Mm. Now, and I'm not exaggerating on this, you would open one of these jerry cans, and what we had was a massive drum, and suspended over the drum was a chamois leather. And the chamois leather was deliberately strapped around the edges so that it couldn't fall in, and it was allowed to have a little bit of a delve in it so that you could pour on the fluid. And the chamois leather had the equivalent of filtering off any water that was in the petrol. Now, when you open the tin, then the petrol came out first because it was lighter. And then you got to the water content, and without exaggeration, half of it would be water. Now, I can understand that water could get into it over a very long period, but only by condensation, and it would only be a small amount. This, I think, was deliberate, that somebody had filtered off 100 octane fluid and they'd inserted water to make up the weight. And this was tin after tin. And the point was this, that people like myself, who were supposed to be doing other work, had to be used to do this work. And so there was a staggered team of ground crew filtering off this fluid. So it was a whole day job, and it was smelly. Now, you've got to allow for that the aerodrome was still compacted sand and gravel, well, mainly sand. And what they'd done was to bury large fuel tanks into the sand. And so we had the problem then of getting the water off, which was on the top of the chamois. The petrol soaked through, but it was slow process. But as soon as you got a hint of the water, then you dumped it. At least I did. And it came clearly that some of our merchant seamen had risked their lives, probably shipping half water. I don't think it was entirely done in Gibraltar.
Do you think the theft was carried out in England before the
It's
petrol?
Only an opinion, but because of the state of the rust, it had been there for a long time. And if I can carry on, because something does follow that, the after we'd filtered a lot of this water off, and it was then transferred to a small bowser, and the bowser carried it then to the fuel dump, which was in the middle of the airfield, buried in sand. It was on the, it was between the runway and the frontier barrier. Obviously, there had to be access to it. Now, recalling what I said last time, and you asked me about aircraft accidents, then the when a American aircraft,
Hudson,
that's right, Lockheed Hudson, had crash landed and it burst into flames because of the metal it was made of, and there was the bullets flying all over the place. Then it was needless to say that we all scattered as far as we could. Now, unfortunately, the, there'd been a trench dug between the runway and I don't know what it was for. And one of the persons that was running away fell in this trench. Now, another thing happened was that a bowser was shifted, backfired, and it set the sand alight because of the spillage from what we'd been filtering off. I mean, he'd be putting it in, and there was a considerable amount of spillage, and the net result was that there was something like, a very lot. I heard 500,000, but I don't think that was the right value. But so a lot of our effort was completely lost, waste.
The fuel was burnt off.
And fuel was burnt off because it got down to the tank as well. And so that was one of the outcomes of the petrol filtering. But we still had to do it.
You were saying that when it seemed to you that the petrol had stopped coming out of the can and it was now water, you would dump what was left.
Yeah.
How could you tell when it was more water than petrol? Was it the
smell? You couldn't when you emptied it. It was in the process of emptying.
Yeah.
And as soon as you saw the build-up of water in the middle of the chamois, then you stopped because you know full well there was very little petrol on top of that.
Right.
And so there would be some waste from my point of view, but very little.
And you were mentioning about this fire. Were there precautions, standard precautions, in place for handling fuel?
No, not whatever.
No precautions against fire?
No. I mean, today I think the modern way is that you bond between the bowser and the aircraft so that there's no electrical discharge between the two, because that's been known to cause fire. Mm. And no, there was no precautions. It was, you know, take it as you... as it happened.
When you had this big fire after the bowser had backfired, did you have any casualties as a result of that?
No, none whatever. Mm. And that was one thankful... No, the only outcome of that was one chap broke his leg with dropping into this trench.
Was there a fire service on the station?
It had got to the point where it was pointless and they just let it burn out.
Oh.
And so it was quite a blaze, and obviously we had to start moving aircraft away because it was quite a fierce heat. But that's what happened.
You were saying that at Chivna you had buckets of sand and water to control fires.
Ah, yes.
Fires.
Maybe I didn't make it clear. Oh. All the work at, that we were doing is in open air. And we started very early in the morning so as to keep cool. And of course, it was double summer time during the summer, and so we really were starting, very early in the morning. No, it was... everything was done in the open. Mm. The only time that we shut down was when there was a strong wind blowing from the Atlantic, and it whipped up the sand. Mm. Now, if it was summertime and you were in your shorts, because you got a command halfway through the year, at the early part of the year, to change from your tunic to KD. And we all had to do it at once. There was no sort of please yourself. And of course, if you had bare legs and you had this sand blowing against you, then of course we had to cover all engines down, cover down the cockpit area, and make sure that all the surfaces of the aircraft, the movable surfaces, were in the normal flying position.
I was going to ask you if this sand could actually damage the aircraft.
No, because it would only be about 2 or 3 feet high. It didn't get up into a cloud, but it certainly was painful. And when we had to go across to for a meal, it was during the day usually, you ran across.
Could it do anything to the undercarriage of aircraft?
It may have done, but it wasn't obvious. No, there was no outcome from it, as far as I know.
Now, you're mentioning an incident also where a man got drunk and tried to fly a Wellington back to England.
Ah, that was... Tanner was his name. He eventually committed suicide. But he'd been in the town, got drunk with some of his colleagues, and because he was a ground staff, then he had well understanding of how to start the aircraft up and things like that. And this is what he did. And he didn't even line the aircraft up onto the runway. He just simply opened the engines and he crossed the runway, and it crashed into our aircraft, and four were severely damaged. His colleagues then, who were in the aircraft, who were going to fly home, because that was the intent, they just abandoned him, and he was found at the control area. And so he was subsequently charged by a court in Gibraltar, and the outcome of the trial was that he had to spend a year in the prison, Glasshouse. And halfway through it, about 6 months later, we heard that he'd committed suicide.
You mentioned that he had colleagues. Do you know how many of them there were in this attempt?
I think three. And I don't know who they were. It was a stupid thing to do, and the less said about it, the better.
Did you know this man at all, Tanner?
Yes.
What sort of man was he?
Well, reasonable. He was an engine wallow. For some unknown reason, I never really tied up with anybody to talk a great deal. There was only about a couple of persons that... friendly. And in fact, one of them I've written about, Tiny Smith, on that second sheet of paper.
Do you know why it was Tanner was so desperate to fly away from Gibraltar?
No, I don't. I think it was just I can't think of his reactions at all. He was sufficiently compos mentis to do something, but was really not fully understanding what he was doing. Because, I mean, the first thing I would have done was got it onto the runway.
It wasn't a well-conceived scheme.
Say that again.
It was not a well-conceived scheme.
No.
And you mentioned the glass house. Where would that be? Would that be back in England, or would it be
in
Gibraltar?
No, it was at Gibraltar. Oh. So I can only assume that there was the Gibraltar jail, because there wasn't, as far as I know, a specific punishment area. No. The one in Britain, I think, was somewhere near Lowestoft.
Well, there was a military prison at Colchester.
And then that'll be it.
And there was another one at Wotton, I don't know that one.
Yes. It'd be Colchester, though.
Yes, Colchester Military Training Corrective Centre, they called it. Yeah. And then I think the glass house was at Wotton Bassett because it had a glass roof.
Oh, had it?
Yeah.